Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, and thanks for listening to the latest installment of Borders Blatherings, the podcast where Mary Craig and I have a wee blather and shine a light on the curious, shadowy, and, we think, sometime magical history of the Scottish Borders area. It's been a while since we met, Mary. We've had COVID in the house.
Yes, here. Coughs and sneezes spread diseases, so yes, we've avoided each other for a while.
I had to ban you. Well, listeners may not know, but we record this podcast in my kitchen, and we had to ban you for a week or two because my partner Mary had COVID as well. So how have you been since we last spoke?
I've been fine. Busy, but yes.
Yeah, at the tail end of last week, I did bump into you in the archive when you were preparing an exhibition. And you mentioned to me in passing that you had unearthed more information about, you remember when we did the five-part podcast on Murder in Stow?
Indeed, yes.
And you know, we lived with that for a long time, and it really affected us.
We ploughed through
so much in the way of source material and documents. Mm-hmm. And we thought that we had presented to people an alternative narrative.
Yes.
From the official verdicts. And you said that, that was some months ago now, but you said that you'd unearthed a few more pieces of information. So maybe we could just do a little podcast talking through that, because this will be new to me, for sure.
Yes, we're going to revisit the case in a strange sort of a way.
Yeah, when we left it, Eliza had been had spent a long time in an asylum.
Yes, and, 26 years,
26
wasn't
years,
it? Yeah.
And I think on the last podcast episode cover, we had a picture of her holding her asylum number and looking... Yeah. How would I describe that? Just looking world-weary.
To me, she looked pretty broken.
Just broken, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the question is this. What have you found out since to make me feel very sad all over again?
Well, it's curious. As we had worked through the information we got, we first of all thought it was Eliza's story, then we thought it was Samuel's story,
yeah.
And then we kept uncovering things about the White family.
Yeah.
Because remember, they had this daughter, Jane, that mm-hmm. initially we didn't know about, and she had the illegitimate baby. That accounted for baby Robert. And then she was got rid of by the family.
Yeah.
I've still never been able to find her. And so we ended up at the end of it all. Samuel had left the area. Don't know where he'd gone. Sergeant Mill.
Under another
had gone,
name, presumably.
Oh, presumably, yes. Everything had sort of gone back to normal. There was Mr. and Mrs. White in the house. Robert Jr.'s in the mill. Kirsty's behind the counter in her daddy's shop. Yeah. And there's baby Robert. And that was in 1871.
Yeah. Now, I suspect that what you're about to tell us now is not that the White family lived happily ever after.
Mm.
Am I right?
Well, it's interesting. And I came across this purely by chance.
Uh-huh.
Because what I do is, when I'm in the archive, I have an On This Day board. And I put out something that happened on that day. Usually something of national and international importance. The birth of Mary Queen of Scots, or the, you know, outbreak of the Great War.
Providing comfort for the troops.
Yes, behave yourself. And then also something local.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know, Billy Black, you know, pinched somebody's chicken's eggs or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking through the records for something, and I came across this, and I'm going to look at my bit of paper, make sure I get it correct. In March 1872.
Oh, this is very close.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because remember, it was March 1871 that the murder took place. Uh-huh. So it's a year after. Robert White Sr. Arrested for driving his cart in a reckless manner in Gala Shields and found to be intoxicated with hard liquor.
So our upright grocer and pillar of the community,
mm-hmm.
White Sr.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
What's he doing getting drunk in Gala Shields when there are half a dozen places in Stow to get drunk?
Well, in those days, yeah.
And what's he doing getting drunk in public when he could go home? He runs a grocer shop. There's bound to be alcohol in his shop.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, I just couldn't get this. So I thought, oh, that's an odd one. And then I literally turned the page. June 1874. So this is 3 years after the trial.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Jr.
Yes.
Arrested for fighting over Horse Street, Gala Shields. Found to be intoxicated. March 1876, Robert, I don't know, senior or junior, arrested for drunken disorderly in Gala Shields. Now, before 1871, I cannot find a single note of any arrest of anybody in the White family.
Exactly that, yeah.
But within a year of the murder, that's three arrests. So I don't know what is going on there. And a couple of years after that, Robert Jr. leaves home. And I can't find where he goes. He's gone. So the household is Mrs. White and Mr. White, Kirsty and baby Robert. But Robert Jr. has gone. And I'm really surprised that Robert Sr. was involved at all, because he could have lost his licence to be a provisions merchant if he's going to get arrested for being drunk and disorderly.
And this is a man who clearly sees himself as a pillar of the community.
Yes, and Mrs. White was so proud when he wasn't a mill worker, they were a provisions merchant. And here they are getting drunk and disorderly in Gala Shields. And with the greatest of respect to Gala Shields, over Horse Street was a rough street then. You know, it's not like he's going to Gala Shields. Yeah. It's not as if he'd gone to Gala Shields, say, the first occasion. Robert Sr. goes to Gala Shields. He's been selling provisions in Gala Shields at the market, and then he'd just gone for a few drinks and it had gone a bit too much from that. You could understand, but he doesn't sell in Gala Shields. He has a shop in Stow.
That's right.
Now, he might have delivered some sort of, you know, groceries or whatever round the farms round Stow, but he wouldn't be selling in Gala. He didn't have a license to sell any merchandise in Gala. So what's he doing with his horse and cart? Obviously, that's how he got to Gala, to get drunk, to be away from prying eyes, to be away from Stow.
Fascinating, and I don't wish to jump to any conclusions. But I feel I'm doing that as we speak. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say he's enhancing his reputation as a benevolent pillar of the community.
Okay.
And he's helping out the poor. And he's taking goods to the needy, or, you know, because remember in Victorian times there were the deserving and the undeserving poor.
Okay.
And so maybe we can give him that.
Yeah.
As a possibility. We're trading in possibilities here.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, one could argue, and I won't directly, but one could argue that if you carry on with the way we started to see the story unravel,
mm-hmm.
that there has been a bit of a cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And although it seemed a very watertight cover-up at the time, mm-hmm. the cracks are beginning to show.
Yes.
And, you know, small village, small place.
Well, people talk, absolutely.
People talk. And those people locally are beginning to have their own doubts mm-hmm. about what happened. Much as we did as we wandered through this story at the time. We raised so many questions thinking, mm-hmm. well, that can't be right. Why did they do this?
Yeah.
How come it took so long for that to happen?
I think you're spot on, yeah.
Why did they all meet in the White's household without Eliza? Were they getting this story together, this mm-hmm. watertight story? Maybe this begins to crack. And they're having difficulty, just like the modern Conservative Party, perhaps, holding things together. different factions are beginning to emerge.
I think you're right.
And
I think
that right. might explain why both Senior and Robert, they're while in Gala, they're being challenged about the official story.
Yes, yes.
And they're not living comfortably with it.
No.
They're taking to the alcohol.
I can see, you know, it's like anything. If you look at, it's a terrible example, but if you're in the car and you're going on a motorway and there's a car accident, there will those who will slow down to look. There are people who will, oh, look, what's happening there? Oh, look, there's an ambulance. Oh, there's a police car. So I can see after the dust has settled, people going into the shop, maybe some of the local girls want to ask Kirsty a little bit more because she got to go up to Edinburgh, I remember, and be in the High Court,
well,
be the centre
yes,
of attention.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe her mum's story, you don't tell anybody anything, just keep your mouth shut, you stick to the story.
Oh,
so there's
Kirsty
a, you know,
wants celebrity status,
Kirsty,
and she's
you know,
been denied that.
Exactly.
Now.
So a little bit of gossip here and a little, you know, a few people going into the shop that maybe would have normally gone to the shop in Stow, they've gone along to the Killohiet shop because, oh, that was all about that murder, you know, whisper, whisper, whisper. And at first that might seem quite fun, probably to Kirsty. That wears off after a while. And I think the reason, I think the reason why Robert Senior and Junior are going to Gala to get drunk is I don't think they want to get drunk in Stow. Because what if somebody comes up to them and says something and challenges about it? And of course, Robert Senior has to be careful because if he does get arrested for being drunk, he could lose his license to be a provisions merchant. So you go to Gala to get drunk, where hopefully nobody will know you, where hopefully nobody's going to challenge you. But of course, everybody has been in every newspaper, what was happening and who said what. And, oh, your daughter was the one that got, oh, what actually happened? And, you know, and, oh yeah, as you say, you know, so did you really know the family? What were they like? And of course, Samuel's gone now. Everybody's gone. Sergeant Milne, who becomes PC Milne, he's gone. You know, the only persons left behind are the whites to bear the brunt of the gossip
and the
rumour.
Yeah.
And if it's just rumour, then it's stressful for them. But as you say, if it has been part of a bit of a cover-up, maybe they are genuinely feeling guilty because I think Karen, our friend who did the suicide note for us, who voiced that, picked up on something as she said that if Eliza was mad and did do it, these people were supposed to be her friend.
Yeah.
There had been some sort of commotion in the shop and they let her walk away and didn't check up on her. They didn't go along to make sure she was okay. Mm. So even if, you know, it was Eliza that killed the children, maybe the whites are feeling really guilty that they didn't. Maybe Mrs. White and Kirsty are actually thinking, oh, we should have gone along
to
check.
We should have, yeah.
We
yeah.
should have, you know. That's the best case. You know, even if, as I say, it was Eliza and she was stealing silver and she did kill the children and it's exactly as the court said, you are going to think, well, it was her shop, the argument was in, did that trigger it? Are we responsible? Did that push her over the edge to kill the children? Why didn't we go along? Why didn't Mrs. White tell Kirsty to just run along the road and check, see if she's okay? Because they were supposed to be her friends. They were supposed to be the only friends she had, really. And they didn't.
Yeah, this is pure third conditional territory. If I were doing a lesson based on this, which I won't, maybe there is a, you know, if we had gone and just spent some time with her just to involve her in what we're doing, then maybe we wouldn't have got into all this trouble.
Because if you think about it, if Mrs. White had sent Kirsty along after Eliza, Kirsty could have sat with Eliza until Samuel came home from the mill. And those children would still have lived. They would, they, you know, because she would not have had the opportunity to kill them. That's all they had to do. Whether or not Eliza would have let Kirsty in the door after the argument, we don't know, obviously. But you know what I mean? So Mrs. White's thinking all this. And of course, as we said with Victorian morality, all the pressure is on Mrs. White. And Mrs. White has only one outlet for that pressure, and that's her husband. So that maybe explains why Mr. White is in Gala Shields getting drunk.
Yeah, and we also, I think when we were recording this five-parter, Kirsty was actually quite central to a lot of what was going on. Kirsty liked the limelight.
Oh, yes.
We know from her appearance up at the Sheriff Court in Edinburgh.
Yes.
She's been denied that.
Yes, you know, it's all gone. She's had this great...
This life is gone.
And everybody's... And she's quoted in the news, but every newspaper's quoting her and all this. But, and now it's all gone, and she's stuck behind that shop counter. And she's still looking, watching the mill lasses going up and down. And maybe every time they pass, they look in the window at her or something. You know, and Sammy, who may or may not have been the father of baby Robin, he's gone. He's gone. So it's not even as if the gossips have got somebody else to gossip about. They've only got Kirsty to gossip about.
So if there had been a let's call it a cover-up or a conspiracy of some sort, Kirsty is very much the potential weakest link in this chain.
Yes.
Yeah. She's facing the public every day. Mm-hmm. You're right. I think people are maybe going up to their shop specifically to see what they can add to the gossip.
Yeah, see what they can winkle out of Kirsty, see what she'll see.
It's similar to the witch hunts, the witch trials. It's the power of the gossip within a small community the way the fingers, the moving finger, and how it's pointed.
There's also the alternative, Ed, that there could be people in the neighbourhood who think, I'm not shopping in that shop anymore because I know they were involved in that somehow. I don't know how they were involved, but they were somehow. Yeah. And so perhaps Mr. and Mrs. White's shop's actually not doing as well as it was. They might have had a dropping off of customers. There might have been an initial rush, the excitement, the interest, the intrigue, the horror, you know, the horror show. But you might well
they loved the horror
saying,
show in those days,
but there might have been people going, well, actually, I don't know if I want to shop in that shop because they were up to something. And of course, maybe the old rumours about Jane and the baby, because who was the father of baby Robert? And who was baby Robert? You know, that all gets dredged up again. That all gets dredged up again. And oh, remember Jane's, oh yes, where's she now?
Where
nobody knows.
Where's she
she's gone.
Gone.
Yeah. Where's she? So this all gets dredged up again. Can Mr. White walk into any of the pubs in Stow without everybody turning and looking at him? I have sort of, you know, the old cowboy movies when the bad guy would walk in and the piano player would stop and everybody would fall silent and turn and look. I have visions of that in Stow. You know, Mr. Robert and Robert Jr. What's Robert Jr. supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your sister was involved in that. What was going on there? So, you know, you can see how all of that pressure...
That's one scenario, Mary, that they're having to go, which in those days would have been further afield.
Far enough away. You can get to it, but it's not too... And there's also the fact that it's interesting that Robert Sr. is going down in the horse and cart. He's not going on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he not going on the train?
There might well be other people. I don't know.
You know, well, that's the thing. Because, as I say, he's not... got a license to sell goods in Gala Shields.
Mm.
So he has got no reason to take his horse and cart to Gala Shields.
Mm.
He should be walking down to Stow, getting on the train there, going down to Gala Shields to get drunk and disorderly or whatever it is he's up to. I don't know.
But it is giving him, it is giving him, White Senior, a sense of control, which perhaps he thinks in other ways he's losing.
Possibly,
I go in the horse and trap because then I'm in control of what's going on.
And I mean, it may be that he was, say, down at Boland or something, one of the farms down there. So Gala Shields, you may as well just continue on down. But it's also interesting that Robert Jr. is not only getting drunk, but he's fighting.
He's fighting, yeah.
And that's curious. On both occasions, they both paid the fine. They were fined or told they were going to jail, and they both paid the fine because they had the money to pay the fine.
But maybe Robert Jr. has, in a sense, bought in to and is defending a narrative that he's not fully part of.
Yeah, because he's not quite together. Sure. Because as we say, morality is women's work. He's
exactly
not,
that.
Which
yeah.
something's been cobbled together and, you know, I mean, even his sister Jane having the baby, it'd all be hushed up. That's women's work. You know, you don't need to know about this.
Yeah.
But if he's going out in Stow and he's round the pubs in Stow and he's chatting to one of the mill girls in Stow, oh, yes, your sister Jane, she got in the family and had to be sent away. Mm. Oh, yes, and your other sister, she was involved in that murder trial. Are any of the girls going to want to go with him? I mean, some of them might have thought he was exciting and interesting and, oh, everybody loves a bad boy.
Yeah.
But then do you really, when your Victorian daddy says, don't go near that white boy, because they're a troubled family?
Indeed.
And I think that's the label they've ended up with. They've ended up being a troubled family. They've got one daughter with an illegitimate baby, another daughter... tangentially involved in a murder, the murder victim was in their shop. They were pally with the murder victim's husband. They may or may not have been pally with the police sergeant who became a constable and then he left.
Which was
what's
very
going
strange.
On? Yeah. All of these yeah. different things. So I think Robert Jr. is going down, getting drunk in Gala. And who knows, he could have been fighting for 101 reasons. He could have been fighting over a football score. But he might have been fighting because somebody said to him, oh, you're those whites from up there.
There's a lot of reputational risk at stake
yeah.
here.
Because
maybe the fisticuffs are part of defending yeah. that reputation.
And yeah. because the newspapers continued to speculate after the uh-huh. trial was over for quite some time.
Yeah.
Because if you remember, the doctors were convinced that Eliza had gone mad due to the length of lactation. Remember, they were obsessed
yeah,
with how long
that.
She'd
yeah.
been feeding the baby for goodness sake. And the trouble was that there was a lot of speculation in the papers, even after the trial. So it wasn't as if, you know, the murder takes place in March, the trial takes place in June.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't stop because the papers were saying things like, what is motherhood? You know, there were sort of opinion pieces. What is motherhood? And should mothers be lactating? And isn't it terrible, the crime rate in this country today? And
yeah.
So all of these things, and there's a few letters to the paper and things. So it hadn't just gone away in the June. It continued. And then in the March, when Robert Sr. is first arrested, there was a reprise about it. There was an article in, I think it was the Kelso Chronicle. And the Kelso Chronicle are saying, you know, it is a year today since the children died, with Samuel Clafton, that was also known as George. They rehashed the whole thing. So just as it's starting to quiet down and the whites think, oh, well, it's all over.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's
nothing
not.
To see here.
Nothing to see here. They've just about managed to survive and it kicks off again. You know, I mean, this is a family that have to go to the kirk on Sunday.
Yeah.
And everybody's looking and gossiping and pointing and, you know, so yeah. And we're round about the time of the Great Revival, and we're just about the time when the two new churches were built in Stow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Stow had an old church that was built back in the 13th century. By the 19th century, it was far too small. So the Church of Scotland built St. Mary's, and then the United Presbyterian Church built St. Andrew's, two huge, massive Victorian churches. So there's a big Christian revival going on. It's all about Christian morality and what is right and the Ten Commandments and everybody's yeah. involved and which church are you going to go to? Are you going to be in the Kirk of Scotland? Are you going to be in the United Presbyterians? And you've got this family that have been involved in the murder of two children. And you know, if everything is about morality and everything is about Christianity
yeah,
and the Ten
yeah.
Commandments and thou shalt not kill, and yet you were the ones that were involved in that case. You know, so again, there's more pressure being piled on them.
Even the choice of which church to attend.
Which church
would have
to
been
attend.
A big deal for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I believe they were Church of Scotland, which means that they would have to have come out their house at Killachiet, walked along the main road past St. Andrew's and up to St. Mary's, which
yeah.
means that as the congregation of St. Andrew's is gathering, they can see the whites going past along the road. Oh, that's the whites, you know, they were involved in that case, you know. And then they go all the way up to St. Mary's.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
St. Mary's, it's up a rise, it has a long drive. So the congregation of St. Mary's that have already heard, oh, here's whites coming, oh, that's them, you know,
yeah.
that's them.
Yeah.
Is Kirsty wearing the same hat that she wore when she was in the High Court? You know, you can see all of
gossip,
these.
Gossip,
they
gossip,
don't
yeah.
go away.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, when the kirk closed, the old kirk closed, the old graveyard was maintained for quite some time. I think it didn't close until about 1900. So those two little babies are in that Pauper's
Corner.
Pauper's Corner.
We recorded
part
five at one
indeed,
point, standing in that very graveyard.
When we caught all the coughs and sniffles that we
yep.
did. You know what I mean? So, and that's the thing, there is nothing else for anybody to talk about. Because the railways arrived, it's settled, the telegraph services arrived, it's settled, everything is settled in its place. The only bit of news that's happened in Stow had been this murder. And then this big Christian revival when you've got ministers all over Scotland preaching about morality and the Ten Commandments, and it's very much muscular Christianity and onward Christian soldiers and all these sorts of things are getting picked up on. And they're the ones that were involved in that murder case.
So there's great pressure, possibly,
huge pressure.
In terms of dealing with this secret, which is really weighing down heavily.
Yeah. And as I say, before 1871, I can't find a single note.
That's interesting.
Of anybody in the White family being arrested for anything.
Yeah.
They were absolutely respectable. And I do find it interesting that they just paid the fine. That was it. And that would have been a fair chunk of money to pay.
Mm.
I think on the first occasion it was something like 5 shillings. You know, it was a good 2 or 3 months' wages they were having to pay to stay out of prison. Because if Mr. White Sr. had gone to prison, that would have been the end of his provision merchant status.
Yeah, but, well, there were no parties.
Mm.
But if there were, I wasn't at any of them.
Yes.
Well, but if I was at any of them, I didn't know it was a party.
Yes.
But I've paid the fine.
Yes.
Nothing to see.
Nothing to see. And I think that's the problem, is that Mr. White Sr. and Robert Jr. are doing that. Well, it's women's work, though. But I mean, Mrs. White sent us along to chat to him, and then she and Kirsty sorted it all out.
Yeah.
But of course, remember again, in Victorian society, men's lives are out there, women's lives are in the home.
Inside, yeah.
So Mrs. White can hide in the house all day, every day. She's got baby Robert to look after. Kirsty's in the shop. Mrs. White doesn't see her neighbours, so her neighbours can't gossip to her face.
No, I think Kirsty is the weak link in all this. Yeah.
They don't see her.
Yeah.
You know, Robert Jr. has to go to the same mill that Samuel worked in and walk into that mill and walk in and work beside the guys that he's working beside, when they all know, and you can have those looms as noisy as they are, everybody's looking behind your back and digging each other in the ribs and all the rest of it. So Robert has to face that. Kirsty has to face everybody in the shop, because Mr. White is actually out doing provisions round the countryside in his horse and cart, or he's in the back room, you know, sending out accounts.
I can see the picture, Mary. Robert Jr.'s in the mill. The machines are making a hell of a noise.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are, if not vocally confronting him directly, this is adding to the gossip, the innuendo that's going on.
Uh-huh.
And maybe at a tea break or something like that, he gets confronted. And he's having to live with this. This incredible pressure.
Although they have a grocer shop, it's not enough to employ him and his sister and his father and mother. He has to go out and bring a wage in.
Yeah.
So he's got that. And it's because it's the same mill that Samuel Clafton worked at. And Samuel Clafton has moved on.
Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know where Samuel ended.
No idea where Samuel ended. I don't even know his name was Sam. His name was probably
Tommy
Fred.
Smith.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
One thing we do know about Samuel is that we know that he was a reasonable worker, because at no point does anybody ever say he's a bad worker.
Yeah.
The mill owner's going to be a bit annoyed as well, because he's lost a worker.
Mm.
And he's thinking, well, who can I blame for that? Who is physically in my eyesight for me to be annoyed about the fact that I'm lost? Because Robert Jr.'s in his 20s. Samuel was possibly late 30s.
He's experienced.
I've lost an experienced worker.
Yeah.
Whose fault is it? Oh, it's you lot, you Whites.
Yeah.
Now, I remember that you picked up on this very early in the suicide note. The Whites, they wrong everybody.
Yeah.
I don't think they're a liked family in the community to start with. Why would Eliza say, why would she not say the Whites, they wrong me, or they've wronged me, or they're always picking on me, or something? Mm. But she said they wrong everybody.
Eliza's suggesting that a common feeling, maybe, within the village, that others have been wronged by her.
Yeah. So all the people that maybe thought they were shortchanged in the shop, or maybe the loaf of bread they bought was a wee bit mouldy, all those silly little things that don't bother you at the time, well, you remember them later on, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, we all do it. We all do it. The minute something happens, a celebrity is arrested for something, or somebody we know, we go, oh, well, I remember when, because we want to be part of it.
Yeah.
We want to have a connection to the story.
Yeah.
And so maybe when Robert walks into that mill in the morning, are they even talking to him? Who knows? Has he got friends that aren't talking to him, or friend? You know, as a young man, why is he going to Gala Shields to go and get drunk and start fights? And get drunk and start a fighting stow if he wants. Because all the way down to Gala Shields to do it.
Yeah.
You know, is he Why is he not mucking about with his mates here? Or hasn't he got any mates?
That's possibly just putting distance between between the problem and himself.
And again, is he thinking, well, Mum should have sorted this. My mother should have sorted this. Yeah. Mum and Kirsty should have made sure she was okay. And then there's arguments in the house because, of course, whenever anything goes wrong, you should have done this. Well, you should have. Well, I never said I didn't know all of these pressures building all the time. All the time.
Mary, it two things crop up here, and maybe even three. We're talking about gossip in a village. I feel we're doing a little bit of gossiping ourselves, but we're laying it out as possible scenarios.
Yeah.
I'm aware, if I put my podcaster hat on, there may be, as our listenership grows, there may be people listening to this episode who are going, what are they talking about?
Yes, indeed.
I had envisioned this because I met you a couple of weeks back and you said you'd found out more about this story,
yes,
which we lived with. Could we end this? And I had thought of this as being a bite size, but we chatted for quite a while.
We chatted for a while.
So we're obviously happy to revisit the story.
Yes.
Because it is fascinating. And there are many, I think, Victorian issues at stake, but there are many modern parallels as well. Maybe we could end by just doing a little summary of the first five episodes that we did. So just telling the story in very succinct terms so that anyone listening to this episode can relate it.
Yes, as to what we're talking about.
to what we had done way back when we lived and breathed this case some time ago. Does that make sense before we finish?
Yes.
Because people will have heard Eliza and the White family and so on. So if I were to give you a couple of minutes to tell the story, how would you do that?
Well, Eliza Clafton was a young woman originally from Fife. She meets a chap who calls himself John Smith. He's English. She's quite young. He's a good 12, possibly more, years older than her.
Yeah.
They come down to the borders. They move to Selkirk. They are weavers. They get a job in the Selkirk mill. They get married. They move to Killochiet, the little hamlet just to the north of Stow.
Yeah.
They have a little girl and a little boy. A little boy called Daniel, a little girl called Isabella.
Mm.
Eliza herself is somewhat deaf, possibly through work in the mills, and somewhat incontinent due to childbirth. We discover, however, the chap that called himself John Smith was actually called Samuel Clafton.
Mm-hmm.
He had run away from Jewkesbury, where it was alleged that he was the father of somebody's baby, but he said he wasn't, so that doesn't make sense as to why he ran away and changed his name and changed his age, but he did. There was a shop in the neighbourhood owned by the White family.
Yeah.
On one occasion, Eliza goes along to the shop and has an argument with Kirsty, who's the young girl who's the daughter of the shop owner. There is some sort of huge argument, we're not quite sure what about.
Indeed.
Eliza goes home, and when the Whites then go along to see her husband, who's coming out the mill, they tell him what's happened. They go back to the White's house, we're not quite sure why. Then they actually go to Eliza's house to discover that Isabella, the baby, is dead. Daniel has got a gash wound on his neck.
Yeah.
Eliza has tried to kill herself and she's left a suicide note.
Yeah.
Baby Daniel dies as well. Eliza is tried for the murder of the children and she's found not guilty by reasons of insanity, but she did do it. She spent 26 years in an asylum.
Yeah.
Samuel Clafton, the husband, disappears as if he never existed. And the two children were buried in, we think, the pauper's grave in the Cornerstow Cemetery. The Whites' behaviour on the evening always caused us problems.
Yes.
And they also had a daughter called Jane who had an illegitimate baby, baby Robert. She was sent away to somewhere, we don't know where.
She goes off,
There was the implication that Sammy might have been the father of the baby, and there was all sorts of people covering their backs at the very least. That's as succinct as I can make it in a couple of minutes.
I think that's excellent. And I would finish now by saying if anyone who's listening to today's episode, if we have piqued your interest in any way, I suggest you go back and find the 5-episode podcast series that we did called Murder in Stow.
Indeed, yes.
Thank you very much for listening.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.